The Forsyte Chronicles by John Galsworthy. Dramatized by Elspeth Sands. With Dirk Bogarde as Galsworthy, Sophie Thompson as Dinny Cheryl, Dorothy Tutin as Lady Mont, Paul Daneman as Sir Lawrence, and David Yelland as Eustace Dornford. Episode 23.
We've come about this, Mr. Forsyte.
Gathered in the offices of Ginkson, Cuthgate and Forsyte were General Sir Conway Cheryl, his daughters Dinny and Claire, his brother-in-law, Sir Lawrence Mont, Tony Croome, and, the man they'd come to consult, very young Roger Forsyte.
The humble petition of Sir Gerald Corvin, KCB.
It was served on me last week, Mr. Forsyte.
Hmm. And on you, I take it, Mr. Croome?
Yes, sir.
And your involvement, Miss Gerald?
Well, my sister is here at my request. She is acquainted with all the facts.
And what are those, exactly?
There's no truth in the allegations, Mr. Forsyte. No truth whatever.
Then perhaps you would be good enough to tell me what the truth is, Lady Corvin.
The facts, as stated in that document, are correct. It's the inferences which are wrong. There's been nothing between Mr. Croome and myself except three kisses on the cheek.
I see. And your feelings for each other? May I be allowed to know what those are?
I'm in love with her.
And you, Lady Corvin?
He's a friend.
I'll need to study this document in detail, of course, but one thing does catch the eye. This night in the car.
Nothing happened, Mr. Forsyte. Not even a kiss.
Look here, Forsyte. We realize how difficult it's going to be to persuade a jury they're speaking the truth, but they are, you know. I do think you might take their word.
I'm a solicitor, Sir Lawrence. It's my job to ask awkward questions.
So your cousin thought well of you.
Old Soames. Ah, well.
It's because of him we're here, isn't it, Uncle?
You could say that.
The car was an accident, Mr. Forsyte. We didn't plan it.
And neither of you knew you were being shadowed?
My husband had threatened it, but we hadn't noticed anything, no.
And your decision to leave your husband, Lady Corvin, can you give me any reason for that?
It's not something I'm prepared to go into.
Incompatibility? Something worse?
Worse, I think.
Take it from me, Forsyte. My daughter had reason.
But no definite charge. You realize the importance.
He was a brute to her, of course.
You knew him, Mr. Croome?
Never set eyes on him in my life.
Then how?
Tony knows nothing, Mr. Forsyte. He just thinks because I left Jerry suddenly...
This is a serious business for Mr. Croome, Forsyte. He has no private means.
It's the injustice to Claire, I mind.
What will happen if they defend, Mr. Forsyte?
Well, they'd both go into the box and deny the charges. Then they'd be cross-examined, after which we'd cross-examine the petitioner and the inquiry agents. But without evidence that Lady Corvin had strong cause to leave her husband, I'm afraid it's not a very bright prospect.
I won't go into my life with Jerry, and that's flat.
She's right, Forsyte. Some things can't be spoken about.
You say you'll have to cross-examine the petitioner, Mr. Forsyte. Does that mean Jerry will have to come over?
If he wants to win his case, yes.
Oh, he wants to win, Mr. Forsyte. We should none of us be in any doubt about that.
Did he? What luck?
Oh, Mr. Dornford, I was just waiting for the rain to ease. Claire's back at her desk. I've just delivered her.
Ah, yes. How did you find Mr. Forsyte?
Not very encouraging. He's going to consult his partner.
Well, you mustn't worry, Dinny. He's a good man. Something of the repressed artist in him.
Just what I thought.
Jacob served Rachel for 14 years. You won't make me wait that long, will you, Dinny?
Why can't I love him? He's so nice. I'm sorry, Mr. Dornford. I don't want you to be unhappy. Someday, perhaps I shall come to life again. Goodbye.
Heedless of the rain, Dinny hurried away. She knew she should return to her uncle's house in Mount Street, but her spirit was restless.
One more river, Dinny. One more river to cross.
never forget him.
Miss Gerald.
Stack. Oh, how nice to see you.
I was just on my way to you.
Something's wrong, isn't it? I can see it in his eyes. What is it, Stack?
I've had this telegram.
We regret to inform you, Honourable Wilfred Desert, drowned on expedition up country.
One more river, dear. One more river.
Body recovered and buried on spot.
I wanted you to know, miss. You and Mr. Mont.
Thank you, Stack.
I always hoped, miss, you and him is...
Me too, Stack. Well, I could never quite leave.
You'll break the news to Mr. Mont.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry, miss. I know what it meant to you.
Oh, you must try not to grieve, Stack. He wouldn't want that.
Goodbye, then, miss.
Goodbye, Stack. Goodbye.
Slowly, blindly, Denny retraced her steps to her uncle's house.
If you believe, Mrs. Orton, will you marry me? I should never get to the end of you.
No one must see. No one must know. Wilfred!
I'm sorry, Denny. For you, most of all.
It's all right, Michael. It's over.
Are you sure there's nothing I can do? You don't look too dusty.
Quarter chill, I think.
Yes, this wretched weather. You must take care.
Aunt Em's making me a posset. I've always wondered what that was.
It's frightfully strong and frightfully good for you.
I'm not going to be ill, Michael. I'm not.
But Dinny was ill, and for over a month. Not even the news that very young Roger's partner had advised defending Claire's case roused her from her apathy.
What you need, darling, is some sun. You'll feel ever so much better when spring comes along.
Dad tells me you're going to defend.
So it would seem.
I'm sure Mr. Forsythe will do a good job, Claire.
He doesn't believe us even now. Snuffy rabbit. He just keeps harping on about Jerry and what drove me to leave him.
How's Tony?
Ragged. It's a nerve-wracking time, Dinny.
But with the coming of spring, to the delight of her family, Dinny's health did improve.
Hello, Serpent.
Uncle Adrian.
You've given us all a very bad time, you know.
I'm sorry.
Village has required a daily bulletin, and your mother's been reduced to putting flowers in jam jars, there are so many. You know Dawnford's been sending flowers every week?
Yes.
Look here, my dear. What are you now? 27?
Nearly 28.
On the threshold still. I suppose talking it out wouldn't help.
You ought to know, Uncle, that talking one's heart out is not in the family.
One mustn't inbreed to sorrow, Dinny.
I don't intend to. The doctor says I can get up tomorrow.
Excellent. And then perhaps you will feel like coming with me to the Pyrenees. It's Diana's idea. 2 weeks of mountains. What do you say?
Uncle, you're a marvel. Interested in life, yet you never pet yourself. What's your secret?
Dig into the moment. It's what the French do. We English spend too much time regretting the past.
And the future?
Takes care of itself. As you'll discover, Dinny.
For 2 weeks, Dinny and her favourite uncle walked, talked, picked flowers, breathed the mountain air, ate the good food, and drank the good wine of the Pyrenees. By the time they returned to England, there was colour in Dinny's cheeks and a spring in her step. There was also news of Claire's case. The defence had been delivered and issue joined.
3 or 4 weeks now, they think, Dinny. Not that it matters. We're going to lose anyway.
Don't say that, Claire.
I split with Tony. Every time we see each other, we talk about the case, and then we're all at sixes and sevens.
He must be very unhappy.
Well, I've made up my mind. If he wants me when this is over, I shall let him. He'll be ruined anyway, so I shall owe him.
What does she feel? Has Jerry killed all that for her? I don't think you should let the result affect you, Claire.
How sensible that sounds.
Oh, I almost hope you lose. At least then you'd be free.
Dawnford has advised telling Jack Muscombe before the case comes on. What do you think?
Muscombe. The name still disturbs, but not as it used to. You think Tony might lose his job?
It's a possibility.
Well, I could talk to Mr. Muscombe myself, if you like.
You hardly know him.
I know him well enough.
You'd be relieved, Dinny. I hate to think of Tony losing everything.
It's still not too late to withdraw, Claire.
I can't do that. I won't let Jerry have it all his own way.
Then I must see Tony. Find out what he thinks, since you're no longer seeing him.
You can catch him tomorrow evening, if you like. He comes and stares up at me every Saturday and Sunday at 7 o'clock. Quaint, don't you think?
He's in love, Claire. It's natural.
Are you sure you feel up to it, Dinny? You're only just back.
I want to help.
I'm so glad you're well again. We've all been feeling wretched. Poor Dawnford's been quite potty.
I'm glad you came, Dinny.
I haven't been here since... Since Wilfred left. Since Claire came back from Ceylon. Flair gave us lunch.
You're looking better than you did before you became ill.
That's the Pyrenees and Uncle Adrian. He restores one's faith.
I want you to have this, Dinny. It's Wilfred's passport photo and DSO ribbon. There's a letter there, too, which is really for you.
Dear old Em.
If you'll excuse me, Dinny. I must see Fleur before she goes out.
I'm writing now, really, to ask you.
To tell Dinny I'm at peace with myself at last. I don't know whether it's the atmosphere out here, or whether I've gained some of the East's conviction that the world of other men doesn't matter. One's alone from birth to death, except for that fine old companion, the universe. It's a queer kind of peace. But Dinny, I think, will be glad to know of it. Just as I would be glad to know that she, too, is at peace. In 3 days from now, we reach the river, cross it, and follow the tributary to the Himalayas.
Dinny rewrapped the letter with the ribbon and the photograph, thrust them into her bag, and walked out into the bright spring air.
The bank is steep, and wide the river flows.
Look, it's going!
What do you call it?
A cutter. I had a school to bought the dog ate. Rigging.
Yes, dogs like rigging. It's very succulent, like asparagus.
I must run, the wind's catching it.
Peace. There's no peace, Wilfred. There's life and there's death.
Dig into the moment. It's what the French do.
Is that the secret of happiness, then? To be like that child. Brave new world. That's what I have to believe in now. God no longer in his heaven.
We reach the river, cross it, and follow the tributary.
I'm glad you are at peace, Wilfred. Wherever you are.
On Dinny's face as she walked away was a strange little smile. Her long period of mourning was over. She would grieve no more.
Tony, I was told I'd catch you looking up at the Queen.
Yes, that's what the cat's come to.
I've come to talk to you about Jack Muscombe.
I should tell him. I'm afraid I've funked it so far.
Do you want me to?
Why on earth should you?
He's a connection through Uncle Lawrence.
Oh, I don't know, Dinny. I don't see why you should do my dirty work.
Well, he hurt me once. Badly. It might work to your advantage.
Ah, Miss Cheryl, welcome. You'll catch me on the wing. I was just leaving for Bablock Hythe when I got your call.
Thank you for seeing me, Mr. Muscombe.
Always a pleasure, Miss Cheryl. Do, please, sit down. Tea, please, Rodney. You will take tea, Miss Cheryl.
Thank you.
At what do I owe the pleasure of this visit?
I've come about Tony Croom.
Oh. Do you know him?
Through my sister.
A nice boy. Good with the horses. I have high hopes of him.
I wanted to tell you, in confidence, that Jerry Corvin is bringing a divorce suit against my sister, and Tony Croom is cited as co-respondent.
Just put it down, will you, Edna? Miss Cheryl, will you do the honours?
Of course. Tony is in love with my sister, Mr. Muscombe, and they have been going about together, but there's no truth in the charges.
But, my dear Miss Cheryl, no man ever admits...
That's why I came to you instead of Tony. My sister would not tell a lie.
I don't quite see what all this has to do with me.
Mr. Muscombe, my people are behind Claire 100%, but we have no illusions. We don't expect to be believed.
And you thought if I just read about the case, it would put me off young Croom?
I thought you might feel he hadn't played the game.
Well, has he?
People can't help falling in love, you know.
What do you want me to do?
You mustn't take his job from him, that's all.
Well, the husband was in Ceylon, the wife here. It's not
has
as if
Has it ever struck you, Mr. Muscombe, that you owe me anything? Do you ever remember that you took my lover from me?
Ah.
Do you know that he's dead out there because of you?
Because of me?
You, and what you stand for, made him give me up. You owe me, Mr. Muscombe. You owe me.
It was not what Denny had intended, but the well of feeling had been too deep. Form, tradition, these were the rocks on which her love had founded. After a restless night, a note was delivered to her at her uncle's address.
Dear Miss Cheryl, you may rely on me in regard to Tony Croom. Yours very faithfully, John Muscombe.
Thank God.
Jolly decent of your people to invite me for Easter, Denny.
You help to keep their minds off things.
Shall you be in court with your sister?
I must.
I'm afraid it may make you wild. Corbin's solicitor's a brief bruff, and he can be exasperating.
Has Claire got a good man?
Oh, yes, in stone, but he's much hampered by your sister's refusal to talk about Ceylon.
That's definite, you know, she won't.
I like her for it, but I'm afraid it's fatal.
So be it. I want her free. The person most to be pitied is Tony Croom.
Why?
He's the only one of the three in love.
Real English view. Nothing spectacular, but no end good.
We used to play here as children.
Let's sit down, have a smoke. You can sit on my coat.
Oh, thank you.
Pick of the year, this is. Or the Indian summer, I never know. What's yours, Dinny?
Blossom time.
Did your sister tell you I bought a house? It's on Camden Hill.
Yes.
I'd like you to see it sometime.
I'd enjoy that, Mr. Dornford. Thank you.
My name's Eustace.
I'll remember.
Dinny, do you think I could have a photograph of you?
I'm afraid I've only got Snap.
Oh, I don't mind. Even one of you as a girl. I don't imagine you've changed much.
I'll see what I can find. You should sit on this coat too, Eustace. The ground is damp. How's the battle of Pigsville, Dad?
I'm afraid this part of the 3P plan has run into difficulties, Dinny.
Anything to do with your Mr. Bellows?
Oh, you've hit the nail on the head. He'll stretch the job out indefinitely to keep his men in work. It's exasperating. I can't help sympathizing. A chap who sticks by his own men is to be admired.
I've been to see Tony Croom.
Oh, any developments?
No, I just wanted to tell him I've talked to Mr. Muscombe and he won't lose his job.
He's got grit, that boy. Pity he didn't go into the army.
I'm sorry for him, Dad. He really is in love.
It's still a common complaint, I believe. But what about you, Dinny? When are you going down into battle again?
Battle, Dad? Is that what it is?
Eustace Dornford's not a man to give up easily.
You're amazing. No one would think we were in the middle of a divorce. And I know what that means to you and Mother. The outward sign of an inner disgrace.
Well, I wouldn't go so far.
No, don't deny it. It's nothing to do with your belief in Claire. Just that your generation can't quite give up the conviction that marriages are made in heaven.
Oh, we don't want to lose you, Dinny, if that's what you're thinking.
No, but you want me to go all the same. Down into battle. Wasn't that what you said?
By the middle of April, the case of Corvin versus Corvin and Croom had still not appeared in the lists. But Dinny knew it could not be very much longer delayed.
Good of you to come, Dinny.
On the 12th of that month, she had received a note written from Burton's club. It was signed, Gerald Corvin.
You said you had something to say to me.
I didn't want to bring this case, you know.
Why are you, then? The charges are not true.
I'm advised that they are.
The premises may be, the conclusions no.
If I withdraw, will Claire come back to me? On her own terms?
I can ask her, but I don't think so. I shouldn't myself.
What an implacable family.
Claiming damages has not improved our feelings towards you.
Oh, that. I'm willing to withdraw everything if she'll come back.
Oh, in other words, you framed this whole case as a sort of blackmailing device.
Ingenious notion. It didn't occur to me.
You could free yourself and her at any time if you liked.
That sounds like collusion, Dinny.
It's your word.
One's nature is a hell of a thing.
I should hate him, but I can't somehow. I'll talk to Claire. Tell her what you want. But I don't hold out much hope.
Why do you think he did it, Dinny?
He wants you back. That's genuine, I think. And then he doesn't really believe in the evidence.
Nor do I.
You won't consider...
No, Dinny. I'm quite stony. You know, it always amuses me when people think they know how husbands and wives ought to behave towards each other. Fleur was telling me about her father's first wife. She seemed to think the woman made a great fuss over nothing.
How can she possibly know?
Exactly. Until cine cameras are installed in bedrooms, there never will be any real evidence.
The well of the court. Is it the well at the bottom of which we'll find truth, Mr. Forsyth, or lies?
The next 2 days will tell us that, Miss Cheryl.
The 6th of May. The case of Corvin versus Corvin and Croom was to be heard in front of Mr. Justice Simcock. Escorting Lady Corvin into the court with her father and sister was her solicitor, Mr. Roger Forsyth.
We sit here.
Is that the jury coming in?
Yes. The foreman's the one in the front.
Looks a bit like a sheep, doesn't he?
Three women and nine men. Is that good, I wonder?
You mustn't look at them, Claire. Remember what you used to say.
To be outstanding in court, Mr. Justice Simcock presiding.
A full house. If this were theatre, we'd be jubilant.
Corvin versus Corvin and Croom. Husband's petition.
If your lordship pleases, I represent the petitioner, Gerald Corvin, KCB. Sir Gerald, a valued member
Dinny,
of our colonial
Dinny, listen to the
service,
prosecution's opening address. Recall Eustace Dornford's words. Mr. Bruff had barely opened his mouth, but already she was finding him exasperated.
In the middle of September last, while the petitioner was up country in discharge of his official duty, the respondent, without a word of warning, left her home and sailed for England. On board ship was the co-respondent. Now, it is said by the defense...
On and on the voice droned till it reached the words...
I call Sir Gerald Corvin to the witness box.
Damn the fellow. Anyone would think he was enjoying this.
It'll be our turn soon, Dad. Don't worry.
I swear by Almighty God...
5 minutes later, Mr. Bruff sat down, and Mr. Instone went on the attack.
You thought it your duty, did you, Sir Gerald, to institute these proceedings?
I did, yes.
No animus?
None.
This claim for damages, not very usual, is it, in a man of honour?
They will be settled on my wife.
Has your wife indicated in any way that she wishes you to support her?
No.
Would it surprise you to hear that she would not take a penny from you, whether it came from the correspondent or not?
Nothing would surprise me.
Dinny listened to the cross-examination with a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach. Not until now had she experienced the danger, the fear of disgrace.
Now, sir, you are honored. Did you or did you not ill-treat your wife in any way?
I admit one incident which I regret, and for which I have apologized. What was that incident?
Dinny's hand reached out for Claire's.
Lord, I submit that my friend is not entitled to ask that question.
My lord, I must stop you, Mr. Instone.
I bow to your lordship's ruling.
Thank God.
I agree. But without that, we will almost certainly lose.
Are you a hot-tempered man, Sir Gerald?
The danger was over. Dinny released his sister's hand. But there would be fresh dangers ahead. This was only the first day.
Let me ask you this, Sir Gerald. What made you pitch on the correspondent as a possible means of securing a divorce from your wife?
I object to that way of putting it. I wanted my wife back.
I see. So you gave instructions to have her watched. Do you think that was the best way of securing her return to you?
Those instructions were not given till I had returned to Ceylon. By that time, my view of the situation had changed.
You no longer wanted your wife back.
I had returned to Ceylon on the same ship which brought my wife and the correspondent to England. What I learned during that voyage confirmed my suspicions as to the intimacy between my wife and the correspondent.
You listened to gossip, did you?
No.
Not till the end of the morning did the cross-examination end.
My lord, the essence of my case...
What is the judge thinking? He looks like a priest or a tortoise.
Is that from the moment the petitioner acted in such a way, whatever it was, as to cause his wife to leave him, he was determined to divorce her and ready to snatch at anything that came along to secure that divorce.
Dornford wants us all to lunch with him.
Then I suggest, Mr. Instone, that you call the petitioner's solicitor. I'm sure Sir Gerald would have made his intentions in regard to his wife quite clear to him.
Cold enough for you in here, Dinny?
Flair.
Did you ever know such a year?
I say that every May. Claire's in her bath. She's going to have dinner in her room. Cousin Roger's coming, so it's just as well. I'm sure she's seen enough of him for one day.
It's good of you to put up with this, Flair.
Nonsense. It gives me something to think about. Will they get to the end tomorrow?
Well, your cousin says so. Apparently, Jerry's witnesses did rather well this afternoon. Whatever that means.
I think it means they played up to the average man's prejudice.
Oh, and what's that?
That mice shouldn't play while the cat's away.
I thought one went to the law to get justice.
Good heavens, what an idea. Personally, I think the whole thing's more like the Inquisition.
Don't marry. That's the moral.
A bit sweeping till we can grow babies in bottles. Hasn't it ever struck you, Dinny, that civilization is built on the maternal instinct?
I thought it was built on agriculture.
You know, Dinny, you're rather a darling. You mustn't let this business of Claire's spoil things for you. I still want you to marry Dornford.
If it please your lordship and members of the jury, the answer to the allegation of misconduct between the respondent and the co-respondent will be a complete denial. I call the respondent.
Dinny's eyes followed her sister. She was dressed in black, with a close-fitting black hat adorned with a slim green feather.
I feel sick. They're going to torture her.
I swear by Almighty God...
The papers had carried the headlines, Society Divorce Suit, Night in a Car, with the result that there was hardly standing room in the court.
Lady Corbin, I shall begin by asking you a simple question. Is it true that you have been unfaithful to your husband?
It is not.
You swear that?
I do.
There have been no love passages between yourself and Mr. Crewe?
None.
You swear that?
I do.
It is alleged that your relationship...
For over 20 minutes, Claire was questioned. Her movements, her motives, her character, held up to public scrutiny.
I have told the truth, Mr. Instone. Apart from the three kisses on the cheek, nothing took place between me and Mr. Crewe.
Thank you, Lady Corbett. Now, I have one more question to ask. Before I do so, I beg you to consider that very much depends on your answer. Why did you leave your husband?
I left because I did not feel I could remain and keep my self-respect.
Can you tell us why that was?
No. I won't talk about it.
Your husband has told the court that he did one thing he was ashamed of. and for which he apologized.
Yes.
Would you describe that incident to us?
I'm sorry. It's instinct with me not to talk about my married life.
I understand, Lady Corbin.
Well done, Claire.
Once more, Lady Corbin, there is no truth in these allegations of misconduct with Mr. Crewe.
No truth whatsoever.
Thank you.
Then it was the turn of the prosecution.
So, Lady Corbin, you, a married woman, would not call, inviting a young man to your cabin, entertaining him alone in your room at 11:30 at night, spending a night with him in a car, and going about with him continually in the absence of your husband. Misconduct?
Oh, God, it's going to be beastly.
Not in itself, no.
You have said that until
the prosecution went straight into the attack. Lady Corvin and Mr. Croom, it alleged, had not met on board ship, but had begun their relationship much earlier in Ceylon. Claire refuted each allegation calmly. But then the prosecution turned to her conduct during the voyage home.
That you invited the correspondent to look at photographs. May I ask how you were dressed?
I regret to have to inform you that I was fully dressed.
Quiet, please.
Damn, I was afraid of this.
My lord, may I ask to be protected from these sarcasms?
Eustace did tell you, Claire.
Answer the question simply, please.
Yes, my lord.
I suggest, Lady Corbin, that you and Mr. Croom were lovers before you left the ship.
We were not, and we never have been.
It's going badly, isn't it?
Then he was right to be anxious. Claire answered each question truthfully, but not always wisely.
Nearly over, darling. You've done wonderfully. He hasn't really shaken you at all.
It's all so horrible.
Denny and Claire had refused all solicitations to lunch and had gone to walk in Lincoln's Inn Fields.
It's Tony I feel sorry for. What did that beastly man say I'd subjected him to? Ordeal by fire?
Oh, I wish you were in love with him, Claire.
You know, Dinny, England isn't modern at all. The stigma attached to divorce is the same as it always was.
You mustn't mind about the papers. A 9-day wonder, that's all it is.
It's you and Daddy and Mother I mind about.
Brave new world, Claire. That's what we have to believe in.
Ah, there you are. They're going to recall Corvin.
Why?
I don't know.
Be upstanding in court. Mr. Justice Simcock presiding.
What is Jerry up to? He looks more cat-like than ever.
Oh, Dinny, I'm so tired. I don't care what happens anymore.
Lord, before resuming my cross-examination, I should like to recall the petitioner in connection with the point made so much of by my learned friend. Namely, that the petitioner intended to secure a divorce from the moment of his wife's departure. I shall be short, my lord.
Moments later, Sir Gerald Corbin stood again in the box. Dinny, glancing at his sister, felt her heart beat faster.
You have told us, Sir Gerald, that on the last occasion but one on which you saw your wife before you returned to Ceylon, you saw her at her rooms in Melton Mews.
That is correct.
Oh, God, Claire, it's come.
On that occasion, besides any conversation that took place between you, what else occurred?
We were husband and wife.
What? Quiet, please. You mean the marital relationship between you and your wife was re-established?
Yes.
Thank you, Sir Gerald. That is all I wanted to ask.
Oh, this is awful.
Dinny turned to look at Tony Groom, seated 3 rows behind them. His tan face was pinched and drawn. He looked at least 5 years older.
What must he be thinking?
There was worse to come.
My lord, I recall Lady Corvin to the box.
Oh, Claire. Procedure. Is that what this is? Each side blackening the other till there's nothing left but ruined reputations and broken lives.
Lady Corvin, may I remind you that you are still on oath? You have heard the evidence of the petitioner. Is it true?
I don't wish to answer.
Why?
My lord, when my counsel asked me about my married life, I refused to go into it. I do not wish to go into it now.
The question arises out of evidence given in rebuttal of a suggestion made by your own counsel, Lady Corvin. You must answer. Ask the question again, Mr. Bruff.
Is it true that on the occasion of which your husband spoke, the marital relationship was re-established between you?
No, it is not true.
It's over. We've lost. No one will believe her now.
You swear that?
Yes.
Is it not true that you have made this answer in order to spare the feelings of the correspondent?
It is not.
From first to last, Lady Corbin, hasn't your story been a tissue of lies?
No, it has not.
It's that fool Instone's fault. Idiotic of him to suggest Corbin wanted this divorce.
Very well, Lady Corbin. I have no more to ask you.
I'm afraid you're right. Look at the jury. They know she's lying.
The crucial issue here, members of the jury, is whether you believe the husband's statement as to the renewal of the marital relationship or the wife's denial of it. Credibility.
It was the end of the day. Claire was not in court, neither was Tony Crewe. For nearly 20 minutes, Dinny sat with her father, listening to the man whose face now seemed to her to combine the qualities of priest and tortoise.
The issues are grave for the futures of these people. I am sure I can trust you to give them your best attention.
Well, Dinny?
I'm afraid it's a foregone conclusion, Dad.
Well, she'll be free of him. We should be thankful.
Let's hope it won't be long, Dad. Mr. Dawnford wants us all to go over to his chambers when it's over.
In less than an hour, the jury returned.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are.
Do you find the respondent guilty of adultery with the co-respondent?
Yes.
Do you find the co-respondent guilty of adultery with the respondent?
Isn't it the same
yes.
thing?
Yes.
What damages do you say the co-respondent ought to pay?
We think he should pay the costs of all the parties to the action.
I'm sorry I couldn't be with you. I'm afraid my own case got rather snarled.
It's a bad business, Dawnford. We knew we were going to lose, of course, but we didn't expect to be landed with all the costs.
That's my problem, sir.
Nonsense, young man. You'll not pay a penny more than your share.
At least they didn't fix damages. Something to be thankful for.
Would you like me to apply for an extension? The usual order is for a fortnight, but I'm sure...
Yes, by all means. Do whatever you can, Forsyth.
How much are the costs likely to be, Mr. Forsyth?
Not far short of 1,000, I'm afraid.
Oh, oh Moses.
£1,000 for telling the truth.
I'm sorry, Claire. I did warn you.
No need to remind me.
You'll let me know about those costs, Forsyth.
I must protest, sir. The responsibility is mine.
Don't be an idiot, Tony. You're less to blame than anyone.
If it were up to me alone...
You did your best, Forsyth. We owe you our thanks.
The decree should come through in November.
That's something, I suppose. Freedom.
I think you'll find it's a very great deal, sir.
Tony! Wait! Tony!
Dinny!
You shouldn't have slipped away like that.
Why not? I've been a complete fool, haven't I? Seems to me the only thing I can do now is see Jack Muscombe get another job somewhere out of England. The further away, the better.
Oh, couldn't you wait a while? A month, say.
For what? For Claire to fall in love with me? Don't you think it would have happened by now if it was going to?
He's right. What do I know? Even of my own sister. Don't do anything desperate, my dear. Promise.
A week later, Dinny received a letter.
My dear Miss Cheryl, I write to tell you we have succeeded in coming to an arrangement by which the costs of the action will be met without making any call either upon Mr. Croom or your sister.
Thank you for your letter, Mr. Forsyth. It came as a great relief to all of us.
Glad to be of service, Miss Cheryl.
I have to ask you, did the arrangement you mentioned have to do with my brother-in-law? You understand my anxiety. We're almost anxious now for the decree to go through.
I'm not at liberty to reveal the particular circumstances, Miss Cheryl, but I can tell you it had nothing to do with Sir Gerald Corvin.
I don't understand it, Dinny. If it wasn't Jerry, who has paid the costs?
I think it must have been Eustace Dawnford. I talked to Uncle Adrian about it. He's promised to try and find out.
Tricky.
I hope it isn't him. I don't want him to love me as much as that. I don't want him paying our debts, Claire.
I know the feeling. Smoke.
Oh, yes, please.
They're only gaspers, I'm afraid.
Haven't seen that frock before. You going somewhere special?
I'm expecting Tony.
Oh?
I have a debt to pay too, Dinny. Remember?
An hour later, with Dinny gone, Gare opened the door to Tony Croom.
I'm sorry I'm not dressed, Claire. I didn't know you'd want to go out.
I don't. We're going to dine in.
I've never seen you in red before. Suits you.
I've made a new cocktail.
This room, it's a little different. Did you ever stand here, Claire, when I was down in the street? I never saw you.
I made sure that you didn't.
The news looks empty.
In spite of the law's blessing, Tony, we'd better close the curtains.
I'd like to take this opportunity, Claire, to say I'm bitterly sorry.
For what? You have nothing to reproach yourself with. It is I who owe you.
Oh?
Why so far off, Tony?
That's all it is to you, isn't it? The payment of a debt. Oh, God, Claire, I see it all now. The reason for the flowers and the drawn curtains, your dress, the couch. Is this how you received your husband? Hmm? Is it, Claire?
I'm sorry about that, Tony. Truly sorry.
I won't be treated as a creditor.
That was not what I intended.
No? Well, you needn't trouble yourself any more on my account. I shall go to Jack Muscombe tonight and resign my job. I've enough money to get myself to Kenya. I apologize, Claire. I've been a perfect fool. How could I ever have imagined that you might grow to love me?
Tony!
For the next 3 hours, Tony drove as if his only desire were to distance himself from the room in Melton Mews.
Get on! Do something! Get away!
Finding himself by the river north of Oxford, he stopped and walked across the moonlit meadow to the water's edge.
Smells good. Looks good, too. England under the moon. Sentimental. Not Claire's fault she didn't love me. My misfortune. Oh, Father Thames. Oh, I remember what I felt when I saw it again 6 months ago. The end of my exile. English grass. English sky. English air. Exile be damned. I'll lick my wounds here.
What do you do with a gardener who will roll the stone terrace, Mr. Dornford? Every time I look out at Lippin Hall, there he is, taking the roller somewhere else. Maddening.
Life wears you out. But it does supply, in the process, a suitable lethargy.
You must forgive us, Mr. Dornford. Claire's trial has turned us philosophical.
I'm afraid it's done rather more than that to Claire. She seems to think we lawyers see the courts as nothing more than public confessional boxes.
No, she has a point, don't you think? Dinny's down at Condiford, is she?
Comforting the stricken. We've not had a divorce in the family before, Mr. Dornford. Scandals, yes. Every family has those. There was my grandfather. You remember Lawrence? Hmm? Gambling and enjoying himself. And others. But his wife was long-suffering Scottish, you see. I do hope Dinny doesn't take after her. I want to see her happy.
I hope to call on Dinny shortly. I have business in the constituency.
Ah, yes. You go down there once a month, don't you, Mr. Dornford?
Good of you to keep me company, Dornford. I like a pipe. Besides, I'm glad of this opportunity to talk to you.
So, we've both been scheming.
Am I right in thinking something's happened to Dinny lately? I don't mean the case. I was thinking of her illness and your holiday with her.
The man I told you about, and the man she was in love with 2 years ago, was drowned out in Siam.
I see. Poor Dinny. That accounts for it.
He is the man for Dinny. I'm certain of it. As a matter of fact, Dornford, there was a question I wanted to ask you. Someone has settled Tony Croon's costs. I thought you might know who it was.
Good grief, I have no idea. I'm afraid I never thought of it myself. I rather wish I had.
If that's a lie, it's a good one. But mysterious, wouldn't you say?
It is rather.
Do you think Claire will marry young Croom?
Oh, I doubt it. Unless out of a sense of obligation. I don't believe she's any real feeling for him.
No. I can't see Claire as a mother, somehow. Dinny, on the other hand.
It's been tremendous for me to come across her, Mr. Cheryl. But I'm afraid so far it's been nothing to her.
Well, patience is a virtue. Or used to be before the world went up in smoke.
You believe in her very much, don't you?
Enormously.
What you told me just now about Siam makes a difference, doesn't it?
I think so. A great difference.
Thank you, Mr. Cheryl. Thank you very much.
Nothing doing, my dear. Either he didn't, or he's playing possum.
What should I do, Uncle? Tony Croom's written to me. He's as vexed about it as I am.
Dawnford's a good egg, you know, Dinny. I don't believe he'd tell you a lie. Why don't you ask him point blank?
Oh, it's him. He's early. I'm glad.
Dinny, how lovely you look.
You didn't bring Claire.
She's coming with the young Monts.
Oh, Mother's determined we're all to have a jolly weekend. There's to be no talk of court cases, and absolutely not a word about Italian dictators or the German economy. In fact, I think the only safe topic of conversation will be tennis.
The weekend at Conderford had been arranged to coincide with Dawnford's visit to his constituency. At Denny's suggestion, Fleur and Michael Mont had been invited to make up a party. Everyone was pretending the weekend had nothing to do with the now universal desire to bring Dinny and Dawnford together.
This place has a soul, Dinny. You feel it at once.
It's because it's so overgrown.
I can't begin to tell you how much I've missed you, Dinny.
Eustace, will you answer me one question? Did you pay Tony Croom's costs?
Your uncle's already asked me that. The answer, I'm sorry to say, is no. I never even thought of it.
I'll show you to your room. Good shot, Michael!
That's a fluke. I'll never do it again.
He's just being kind, Mrs. Mont.
Em tells me you're all worked up about those costs, Emmy. Well, it's being obligated and not knowing who to. Well, my dear, for your strictly private ear, I paid them. You? My dad made his money out of the law. It seemed appropriate. But why? I mean, it's very kind of you, Fleur, but thanks to my dad and all his beautiful gilt edges, I'm richer than ever, Dinny. Why shouldn't I indulge myself? Oh, I don't know what to say. Don't say anything. I only told you because Em said you were worried it might be Dawnford. I didn't want any unnecessary embarrassment to come between you two.
Well played. What's that? 4-1?
Great, so.
Oh, dear Michael. He's hopelessly non-competitive.
You've got the sun in your eyes. Jolly decent of you, chap.
How old is Dawnford, Dinny? 36. Nearer 40, I believe. No flutters? He looks very nice in his whites. The past buries its dead, you know, Dinny. She's been through it too, hasn't she? It's the present and the future that matter. And we're the present, and our children are the future. Down into battle. That's what Dad calls it. He's right. Is it sex that bothers you? No.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think so. Good, because it shouldn't. It's perfectly possible, you know, with a good man, and Eustace Dawnford's a good man. Dear Fleur, you really are my friend, aren't you? You're a better soul than I am, Dinny. I don't have your moral sense, but I've a lot of the commoner article. You mustn't let a memory spoil your life.
Dinny, this is like a dream. Are you sure you want to go to mass?
I've only been once. I should enjoy it.
I hope I'm not going to wake up and find you gone. Do you dream much, Dinny?
Yes.
Any that recur?
One. A river I can't cross.
If you could cross it, would you be happier?
I don't know.
I'm afraid I don't want to go to Mass. Let's make for Clifton and sit in a boat.
I wish we'd bought Foch. He likes this sort of vehicle. Being able to sit on someone's feet and get a nice sick feeling is his idea of heaven.
Being with you is mine.
I'm being a beast, aren't I? It's not fair to keep him in suspense.
Oh, I'm so glad we came. It's far too nice to be indoors.
Dinny, are you asleep?
I'm having a gasper.
Then I'll join you.
Where have you been since lunch? I couldn't find you.
Seeing Tony Croom.
What?
The Ford and I went over. Dinny, we've justified the law. Tony no longer looks like a bereaved orphan.
Oh.
I prefer him as a lover than as a friend. The law was right. It knew what we ought to have been.
Are you going to get married then?
Oh, my dear, how can we? No, we shall live in sin. Tony will come up in the middle of the week, and I shall go down at the weekend. I'm happier than I've been for ever so long, Dinny.
Oh.
Women ought to be loved, you know. It suits them.
When Claire had gone, Dinny stayed on at the window, brooding. Claire's words had unsettled her.
Women ought to be loved, you know. It suits them.
It's hopeless. I'll never sleep.
Like the child she once had been, she began to wander through the darkened house, down the stairs, across the hall to the drawing room, out through the French windows to smell the perfumed night.
If only I was a child again. Who is it? Is anyone there?
It's only me.
Eustace. Couldn't you sleep either?
Afraid not.
Oh, I'm sorry if I've disturbed you.
Ginny, I don't think I can take much more of this.
I know. Oh, I'm sorry. I've been so...
It's the end of the world, unless...
Well, it's all right, my dear. It's the beginning.
The wedding of Dinny Cheryl and Eustace Dornford took place on a sunny September Saturday in the village church at Conterford, where Dinny and generations of her family before her had been baptized.
Thank you for coming. The bridesmaids are waiting. All right, my dear?
In good heart, Dad.
Good girl.
Dinny, on the arm of her father, was a picture of serenity. Behind her came two tiny flower girls, two page boys, and four bridesmaids, all dressed in delphinium blue.
You'll have two boys and a girl. I feel it in my bones.
You know best, Em.
She doesn't love him now, but she will before the year's out.
As the bride reached the altar, the bridegroom took her hand.
My darling.
She's beautiful, isn't she, Michael? I do hope she'll be happy.
It's what I've always wanted for you, my dear.
Yes, I know.
Are you then?
Yes, Michael, I am.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation.
Love was in the air, the one force, save death, over which man has no control.
With my body I thee worship, and with all my worldly goods I thee...
Love which mocks dictators, bishops, police, and every good intention, which has no shame and owns no master, and now and again makes two hearts one till death.
I will.
Soames and Irene. Irene and Bosinney. Winifred and Darty. Val and Holly, Fleur and John, Michael and Fleur, Claire and Tony, Wilfred and Dinny, Love, 40, Fickle, Faithful, Doom, Devoted. It was all there, in the peal of the bell.
I'm nearly over.
Over, darling?
Over. My dream.
I'm the happiest man in the world, Dinny.
Thank you for waiting for me. This is the beginning.
And for a few moments, in that peaceful corner of England, time stood still. And love alone held sway in the hearts of men.
In episode 23 of the Forsyte Chronicles, Galsworthy was Dirk Bogart, Dinny was Sophie Thompson, Eustace Dawnford was David Yelland, Claire was Miranda Foster, and Tony was Matthew Sowan. Dorothy Tutin played Lady Mont, Paul Dainman, Sir Lawrence, Amanda Redman, Fleur, Gary Bond, Michael, and Philip Sully, Wilfred. Sir Gerald Corvin was played by James Warwick, Stack by Danny Schiller, Adrian by John Moffat, Jack Muscombe by Aubrey Woods, and Hilary, David King. Vincent Brimble played very young Roger Forsyte, and James Green, Mr. Instone. The little boy was William Wortley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Carol McShane, Anne Bunting and Keith Graham. The production assistants were Liz Holt and Sally Evans. The director was Janet Whittaker.